Blog Talk Radio.
Why? Yo, fuck them niggas away. Yeah. Now we sounding sweet. Go, fuck them niggas away. Block them bitches who fake. Everybody is real and everybody too fake. Hell face, hell face, hell. Wait. Fuck them niggas away. Block them bitches who fake. You could be an earthquake or be a snake. Hell, faith, hell, let's get it. Rock with me. Fuck them bitches who fake. All my shit on my plate. Y'all be under a fake one like you Donald Toupee. No real knowledge on foreign policy, obviously fake. But it's obvious, broken promises shall be a fate. I'm like the coast, dope as poet, no bullshit. I'm so devoted, I go at like 40 bitches. But I always go with Chloe, my baby mama G, my baby mama T. Labor took like 40 hours for no MEDs. pick up the Maybach, I put these niggas in pieces. I dog shit and watch these niggas walk in the feces on features. See, the problem is they Malcolm Jamal Warner, I'm Malcolm X. Compare, yeah, realest nigga everywhere. Keep my peeps in Christian and they never gonna lose their edge. Fuck it though, we like fuck it though. Me and Sean Big Puffy though. He been on for a minute now, but with him around, I'ma double up. Try one and another one. Fuck you niggas more, another one. Fuck you niggas, I'm Kirk Henning. Y'all niggas looking like bubblegum. Real shooter, Prince Ballard. Real shooter, Prince Devin. Only Buddha, no limb bias. Nobody tries, we too excellent. The execution here is too special. Bless the booth, what I do special. You a main event, a main event. What I do, pay-per-view special. You sleep off a Lawrence Steele. I'm peeping all you artists still. MMG still the hottest still. Like Rick Kelly and Arnie still. Woo!
Welcome to Wrestling. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to be joined by Justin.
Hey, wrestling fans.
Hey, welcome. Yes, we have a loaded show. Definitely not loaded with that WWE Raw.
Hello. Yes, I'm here. Hello, technical difficulties on my side, but I'm here.
Damn. It got to be the DNC.
I think you're right.
Right. See, they anti-Bernie and anti-Trump.
Yeah, but it turns out that Joe Biden might run, but he's gonna be in a big deal in the Democratic side of the for presidency. Bernie right now is a front runner right now. I see Bernie Sanders coming out from the Democrat Party.
And he can win by 4 points. Don't worry about that, folks. On the show all day.
Yeah.
Do you believe it? The fat man is running for president, Larry Hogan.
Why? Well, I heard about it that he's gonna run. He thought about it, but he's better to stay governor. I mean, I wouldn't run out with him. He did his purpose as governor of Maryland. I think that he shouldn't run. No one's gonna beat Trump.
Sure.
Nobody.
Right. And it seemed like they was calling him a fake Republican, calling him a sneaky liberal. Larry Hogan made a basically
all
sorts
of names.
Right. He said this is not no suicide. It looks like a suicide.
Yeah.
Yes. What you think of Monday Night Raw?
Actually, Monday Night Raw wasn't that bad of you know, wasn't that bad of a show. I don't know what the Bray Wyatt thing is going to be. I'm going to see where that goes. But it wasn't that bad. You know, given Seth Rollins, you know, Iowa, his home state. And Davis is good now since Brock Lesnar is gone. So I'm like, I've been watching it.
You know,
and I've been liking what I'm seeing. The save that
was not too bad. It's a, you know, not a potential there. Styles is on Raw now. I mean, it's going to be good.
The ratings went down with a low also. Definitely even the third hour, 2.18 million viewers. Of course, they had a good match with Cesaro and Cedric Alexander. They had that also, of course, the three-way. But it just also the skit. But yeah, I definitely like the Bray Wyatt new character skit.
He looks cleaner.
Right.
No, he doesn't look all grungy looking. He doesn't look that grungy. He used to look real grungy.
Right.
So, you know.
Yeah. It looks like Mr. Rogers meeting Freddy Krueger.
Yeah.
And then that puppet, that vulture puppet on there.
I kind of thought it was a dinosaur. But yeah,
that's what I thought it was. I thought it was some type of dinosaur at first, but it looked like it's Captain Chesapeake in Sesame Street. Right. Yes, we're still waiting for our guest, TJ Perkins. Yep, he's flying to a studio near you.
And that guy is a veteran when it comes to pro wrestling. I mean, the man has done everything. Wrestled everywhere, just about. I mean, the man knows his way around the wrestling world. It'll be a pleasure. It'll be a big pleasure talking with him. Big pleasure.
Yes. That is true. Also, where is the other situation with it's Rick Rude resurrected back in WWE, but with
Bobby Rude. I don't know how I feel about that.
Right.
Well, let's see what happens with it.
Yeah, Vince trying to do something. Oh, he talked like Rude. He kind of looked like him. Let's give him Ravishing, the glorious one. And also, they fix a few things on the roster shake up. Also, they put couples back together. Almas is back on SmackDown. No, he's staying with Raw because of Charlotte, basically.
Right, yeah, he's on Raw, yeah.
Because since they're a couple and. Selena Vega is going to with Alexa Black since they a couple to SmackDown.
Not really married. Isn't she married to Alexa Black? Or are they just dating?
I think so. Yeah. It's so many just like Bray Wyatt and what's her name off bat? The ring announcer.
JoJo.
Yeah, Sojo, yeah, she's definitely Yep, have a bun in the oven right now.
I gotta admit, these wrestlers, they're not being you know, in the closet about their relationships. Charlotte Flair,
right.
And her man has a lot of pictures on the social media.
Yeah, I've seen. Yeah, interesting. Yep, and word around the campfire about Sasha Banks is she want to sit out until her contract is up. But it's a loophole, too, that I think Vince is going to make her extend it long in some situation since she haven't been at work. So it's going to be just like Neville's contract, basically, a little bit longer. Until she go by the rules, basically.
That is, the thing with Sasha, everyone's talking about her. My opinion is this. I don't think she should leave WWE, but I understand perfectly why she's getting upset. I don't think she's a brat or spoiled or entitled. The lady is really passionate about what she does, her craft, her profession. She was given... You know, they said she was going to do certain things, and she, you know, and it was going to be a long, you know, they said she was going to be, her and Bayley going to be tag team champions for a long time, and then they lost to the Iconics. Now, Iconics is not a bad tag team. I don't see anything wrong with them. I'm content with the Iconics being a women's tag team champion. I'm content with it. But Sasha, you know, and Bayley, they've been with the company a lot longer. They bust their butt. So I can see why they're upset, but it's not end of the world for Sasha. It's not. I mean, anything could change in wrestling real quick. Anything. You know, they could be, she'll be champion again in the next pay-per-view if she shows up. You know, that's my opinion. What's your opinion?
Yeah, they was giving up they wanted a long title reign for the belts, basically get the tag straps over. And this was basically kind of too soon for them to go for the Iconics and stuff. Nothing against them. They good workers that been at from Shimmer and Australia and other indie places. And they talented, but right now it was too soon for them to lose the straps. Bayley and Sasha. And I guess you know how Vince booking, basically. He doesn't care as long as the TV money. Even with he keep changing the Viking experience, Hanson and Rhodey got their names changed, and now they two football teams in one, the Viking Raiders.
Yeah.
Viking fans and the Raiders organizations are not happy right now. They giving Vince the fuck you.
I don't understand why they keep changing their names. They were fine like they were before when they were in NXT. And they were fine then, you know, with their names.
Right. I guess the next one's going to be Redskin Cowboys. Vince is just out of touch. Leave the damn name alone.
What are your thoughts on AEW? They signed James Storm, the tag team, Private Party. Their roster is getting better. Who are they signing?
Yeah, but basically the TV hasn't been on yet, right? They haven't been on TV yet or started yet with the pay-per-view. That's it next month. But it looks good. Basically, where they headed to. And I just don't want to see them basically, you know, they're going to take their time basically, you know, but it's getting tons of buzz right there, and Vince doesn't like it. He just removed Undertaker and Angle from Starcast.
Yeah, I understand why he did that, because he wants to protect his product. Like most businessmen, they think their product is good, and they want their product to stay on top. I understand that. But he should be afraid, though. I'm sorry. He said I heard he's not, but they got their roster is just good, and they're doing something fresh. When a pay-per-view, when a Double or Nothing pay-per-view was his next one, sold out in 4 minutes. 4 minutes. I don't think any, correct me if I'm wrong, has there ever been a WWE event sold out in 4 minutes? I can't recall. If it has,
I mean, even.
4 minutes. I mean, wow. And like I said, they don't even have a TV deal. They just got, they got hardcore wrestling, loyal wrestling fans already. You know? That's how they sell out, you know, because of what they do on social media and everything. And, you know, they connect with the fans that way. And I watch the Being the Elite YouTube channel every week. I look forward to that. You know, the Young Bucks, Cody, you know, Kenny Omega, all of them. Oh, I got it. This coming Saturday, it's a Crockett Memorial Cup.
That's gonna be interesting.
North Carolina. Oh yes.
What?
Oh man. I mean the NWA. I mean the NWA is still around. I mean, my favorite belt in all of wrestling. My top two favorite belts is the NWA Heavyweight Championship belt, 10 pounds of gold, and a WWE Eagle belt. They're my top two favorite belts of all time in wrestling. And Nick Aldis, the NWA heavyweight champion, the national treasure, that man is what you call the quintessential champion, that, you know, the supreme alpha female. I mean, alpha male. Sorry about that. Alpha male, you know. Think about this. The man, you see his interviews, he's always in a suit. He has the 10 pounds of gold. The man is heavyweight champion. That's how Ric Flair used to dress in a suit. Because, you know, if you're the heavyweight champion, it means that there are like 7 billion people in the world, and no one, that very few people, or a select few, will call themselves world heavyweight champion. You know, it is a special honor, and it stands out of, you know, stands out among a lot of things in this world. You know, not to mention wrestlers or like one of the top athletes in the world. You cannot see any basketball, football players coming in into the wrestling world and really being successful. A few have, but not many. You know, it's hard to do. I mean, the man is just like, my opinion, you know, one of the best champions out there. Kofi Kingston, I like, okay? Kofi Kingston is an alpha male, too. The man works his butt off and, you know, had all those gauntlet matches. The man could kick butt, okay? I like Kofi, too. You know, not taking anything away from Kofi. Daniel Bryan, you know, Jay Lethal, and now is Max, now is and Ring of Honor is Taven, you know?
Right.
Not taking anything away from them. But when you're the world heavyweight champion or world champion, you should dress a certain way. That's just my opinion. You should look like money. You should be money. You should be very distinguished in your attitude and how you dress. Because you are the alpha male. Nobody can beat you. All these billions of people in the world, and only a select few get to do what you do, is call themselves world heavyweight champion or world champion as a whole. It is an honor and a big privilege. You know, that's my rant for, you know, what I think a heavyweight champion should be. You should not look like
someone living in a trailer park. You know, you should not look like a casual hey-ho, you know, so-so dude, casual dude. You're the heavyweight wrestling champion, the best of the best. So you should dress like best of the best. You should, like, yeah, I know I am. You should look important, feel important, be distinguished. Nick Aldis is that in every sense of the word. He's fighting the villain, Marty Scurll, this coming on Saturday. You know, at the Crockett Cup. You know, they've been doing a lot of hype and a lot of good promos between the two. So the match is going to be, the whole event is going to be good.
Right. Britain even with the, right. The Rock and Roll Express, basically.
Yes. Oh, man, you want to talk about old school. They keep the tradition alive and everything. I mean, like, man. The Midnight Express
is going to be there, too.
Go ahead.
Right. I just hope the surprise be Powers of Pain also.
Ooh. I didn't see that.
Yeah. They do have a surprise slot, I think. Yeah.
Well, let's see. I have the Ring of Honor app. So I think it's going to be to the Honor Club members, it's going to be available. So I'm definitely going to check that out coming Saturday. It's available
right.
to the Ring of Honor Club people.
Right.
Speaking of Ring of Honor, the Briscoes, after that terrific G1 Supercard WrestleMania weekend, you know, the Briscoes and the Gorillas of Destiny, who are the Ring of Honor Tag Team Champions and, you know, IWGP, heavyweight tag team champions. They've been going at it, and they've been, oh man, their promos have been incredible. Woo! I'm telling you, the Briscoes scared the crap out of me. Those guys, I would not want to meet on the street at all.
Yes, and this thing with the free agents, Big Cass and Enzo.
Yeah!
I mean, Big Cass, Cat, cut his promo was shit. It was horrible right there. Yeah, Enzo should have took over right there. And I think Big Cass needs to go to the Kevin Nash School for big men to talk.
Oh, yeah, Mike Fields, not as good. Mike Fields is a little bit better than Ronda Rousey's, a little bit, but not much.
I wouldn't even compare that, nah. I mean, Ring of Honor desperate right there, and the fact is kind of slowing them down right there, but the ones behind the booking, they have booking changes now with Joey Mercury and Bully Ray on a creative team with Hunter Delirious Johnson. And I think it's Joey Mercury idea right there for this Enzo and Big Cass right there. And even with the Beautiful People back and but the fans don't really care about that, basically, it seemed like, because they know that Kaz and Enzo are not good wrestling. They drain in the ring also.
And Enzo got hurt a lot.
Yeah.
He can talk, but he can, you know, like you say, his wrestling skills is not that good. His in-ring skills are not that good.
That's true. I guess they best of doing a street fight.
Yeah. They could use more work. I think they should go to Japan Dojo and then, you know, learn how to wrestle there.
Right.
That's just my opinion. Because, you know, I heard nothing bad about the dojos in Japan. They all pretty good. Any wrestler comes out there are grateful for the time they spent, you know, in Japan.
you know, right. learning in, you know, Japan dojo.
Yes, that would work right there, the Japan dojo. But you know how they are, basically, it's up to them. But I think they want to sell more tickets and seats right now with the Ring of Honor right there, and hopefully they can get more Bullet Club members that's going to be on Ring of Honor TV.
Yeah, that would help.
Yeah.
You know, because if the Young Bucks and Cody, and you know, their contract will Ring of Honor. It's been a little bit. There's been a void there, you know. We still
right.
have some exciting teams. I like PCO. Oh, man, PCO is incredible. The guy's in his 50s. He's doing moonsaults and somersaults outside the ring and everything, putting the ring onto the floor and all that. The man is, wow, pretty decent.
Yeah, he's a machine, Pierre Collette. And he was doing some good stuff in TNA also under the Mr. X thing for the X Division in early 2000. And he was everywhere for flying around basically, and like he had never did before basically. And it's just amazing. Yep, him and Brody.
But I wonder.
Yeah.
I wonder what's going to happen with the Women of Honor belt, you know, Women division of Ring of Honor. You know, I haven't seen it on TV damn much since G1 Supercard. I know they pre-taped, you know, ahead of time, but I haven't heard much from the women.
I guess probably because I think their champion is out on the. I think she's banged up. I think that was another reason right there, and I guess they're gonna start building up with the beautiful people, the angle that they did basically, right now with Mandy Rose.
Mandy Leon.
I mean, Mandy Leon. Yeah. Of course, not Mandy Rose.
That's a whole different night and day difference between the women. Yeah, you know. Now, I could like Mandy, but in a way, you know, they kind of like forcing her on us. You know, she's okay, but I like Naomi better and some other women wrestlers better.
Yeah, and Velvet Sky she's draining the ring right there, and she had an early retirement like for almost 2 years, and now I'm back. Of course, she's brought back because of Bully Ray there. But Ring of Honor, they have the money to compete with Vince, but they don't want to do it. Basically, to throw money for big contracts.
So, yeah,
but I think
I never understood why Ring of Honor's been around all these years and don't have a major TV deal or like a network. They, you know, had the money. I don't get it. I never understood that. I knew they had. There's always been an opportunity for them to get a big, you know, a big contract on, you know, on on a major network, but they don't have it. Like AEW already have a contract with Turner Sports. You know, boom.
Oh no, not they haven't have no contract yet. It's not.
Not yet.
Not
okay,
official.
Not yet. Okay. Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's right now. It's tough for other companies to get that huge TV deal on a major network like Impact Wrestling. they on a small network that they own basically 50%. And of course, Ring of Honor with Sinclair, they got their affiliates right there, and it seems like MLW is having a very good paying TV deal with Bein Sports right there. And I think their highest viewers was like over 100,000 viewers like 2 months ago.
MLW, Major League Wrestling is not pretty good. They have a good champion, Filthy Tom Lawler is a good champion. They have Contra. I feel like they have more heels than more bad guys than good guys. MJF, you know, and his group. But I like Brian Pillman Jr., you know, and his group. You know, the British Bulldogs.
Yeah, that's the Hart Foundation. Yeah.
I like them. They do good shows every time on YouTube. I like them.
Oh, they have, yep. It's like it's,
they have a good
balance. It's balanced with everything. Better bookers, better writers.
And the commentating is good. Oh, man. Okay, you have James Cornette on commentating. It's going to be good. The man has a gift of gab. I mean, he can talk his butt off. I mean, he's just great on commentating. And you put him with anybody.
Right. Right about that, yep. And they have a working relationship with AEW also.
Yes, they do.
Yep. Along with, of course, AAA, they had working deals with them and Impact Wrestling and AEW. It's getting better, even with a few CMLL guys also. And La Parca, they use La Parca the right way, in which WCW should have been using her.
I mean, is it actually same La Parca from WCW? I thought it was his son. But it's the same dude, same guy, same wrestler?
Yeah, along with his son,
Billy
O. LA Park. He lost the name La Parca because it's owned by CMLL and, I mean, you know, AAA Mexico. And they've been using this La Parca. He's not La Parca Jr. anymore. They just use it as La Parca, and people already know the difference.
And you mentioned being in sports. I didn't know how they're like a worldwide sports. I mean, worldwide company. I mean, I looked them up. Man, they have a lot of, you know, they do rugby, they do cricket, they have a whole lot of stuff they do.
Right.
Wow.
All over, and they push, they use more of Hispanic talent because that's where they want to draw more Latino viewers because it's a Spanish channel.
Now I have a question for you about NWA. We were talking about NWA earlier. They have a quality world heavyweight champion. They had a good United States champion. Willie Mack, and they got Jazz as the women's champion. You know, probably Jazz is the most dominant champion right now in wrestling. I mean, she's been a women's champion for well over 2 years, nonstop.
Yeah, but right, and it's been breaking news. She's no longer a women's champion. She relinquished the title because of personal reasons.
Oh, whoa. Man.
Yep, and that's going to be changed during the the women's card is now Allison Kay versus Santana Garrett for the vacant NWA women's title.
Hoo-wee. Are they going to fight this Saturday at the Crockett Cup, or nobody going to have the match?
I don't remember the match, but it's going to be on the Crockett Cup.
Okay.
Oh. Yeah.
I like to see NBA get the TV contract too.
Yes. Definitely want to see that. And it's like basically that that once AEW gets that deal, that it's going to follow. Others going to follow through. If they reach the viewership and the network happy with them. And it's been some of these reports said that they not gonna get a paid deal. They just paying for time. Bullshit.
Yeah.
It's a money deal right there.
Mhm.
These dildo idiots. Yes, dildos. They have dildos up their asses.
Yeah, they think there's some people that think they know everything, and they just. They want to talk negative stuff, about things. Internet trolls.
Right.
Some of them are internet trolls.
Right. Yep. Hey, the ones that look for, they can watch shitty matches on and suck up the fence all the time.
Yeah, they watch those on those matches, and then they say, "Oh, that's a classic match." Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
I'm starting to think, like, you and I, we come from a different, era in wrestling. We're old school fans. Some of these new school fans, I respect them. They wrestling fans just like us, but I think they're missing the value in some things.
Right.
I think, people that watch, WWE, who's strictly WWE, they call every match a classic, and not every match is a classic, Yeah, this is going to be a classic match. This is a classic, I don't think people understand what a classic is, And
right.
I'm just worried about that. These new school wrestling fans, they certain things they know, certain things they don't know. But if you get most of the wrestling fans, I say Ring of Honor fans, people who watch NXT, they really value actual wrestling, the moves. Because NXT pay-per-views have been NXT takeovers, all of them have been incredible. Incredible wrestling from start of the bell to the end of the bell.
Yeah, and it's surprising
that. And I think
there's
a need. I think Triple H knows right. That there's a need for actual wrestling.
Right, and I noticed that most of the viewers from Raw still doesn't know who these guys are once they come up from NXT because of the because of the network right there, maybe because they get a. I said like 100,000 viewers doing the NXT thing. Yeah, it's the casuals that basically don't, they don't care about NXT.
Right. Hey, speaking of NXT, what's going on with Nikki Cross? I mean, is she on the main roster? She's not on the main roster? Because that's a good wrestler. She's a good wrestler.
I think she's still on the roster, but maybe she's hurt or haven't been used. They don't know what to do with her. It'd be like that, basically, with a huge roster that he has, basically. Sometimes you forget who's the champion.
Yeah, sometimes you can. It can happen. Now, we've been saying, you know, talk about the superstar shakeup, you know, how Raw is, you know, how, you know, Raw has been, you know, getting better, but it's still dragging on in the reins. What do you think Vince needs to do to get the reins back up on Raw and SmackDown? What are they missing, you think?
I guess put the ball in Triple H's hand.
You know what I'm saying? There's a lot of people are saying that.
But Vince's not going to give it up right there. Yeah. It's like Vince has this ego right there. The contract money and stuff. He don't want to give the fans what they want, so it's Vince McMahon's world.
Yes, Bob, I say this again. Brock is gone, so I am watching. I'm getting back into Raw now since Brock is gone. I mean, him coming out or being the first match was to me a positive sign. So I'm like, yeah, this guy has to go, and he lost. Seth Bean, I'm like, oh yes, relieved. Something was, you know, something was listed. You know, so my man is still doing good stuff. Things that he's doing is good, but they could do a whole lot of things better, and I think they know that.
Yep. I just think that. And I just think Vince just needs to open up with the fans. And ladies and gentlemen, it's time. We have a special guest. He's former WWE Cruiserweight Champion, TJP.
Yeah, how's it going, guys?
Good.
Hey.
Welcome to Wrestling Effect, the radio.
Thank you very much for having me. I apologize for my delay.
No worries. No worries at all. Yes.
Oh, what should we call you? Should we call you Mr. Perkins? Should we call you Manic? Kuma? What should we call you?
You guys can call me whatever you want, but most people just call me TJ.
Okay.
Yes. What was like starting out at a young age wrestling in your early teens?
Well, it was kind of like being thrown to the lions because it's kind of how it was. I started at 13 and... it was also at a time in the world where it wasn't the way it is now, you know. We didn't really have, like, most people didn't have cell phones. The internet didn't really exist the way that it does now with, like, social media and everything. So it was kind of like the Wild West.
Awesome. And you just been under so many like bad gimmicks, like Puma. You also did Suicide and Manic. Which one is your best?
Well, that's a tough question. I've actually done over 10 or 12 different mask characters overall. And they're all very different. So I guess I kind of looked at wrestling maybe the way that Johnny Depp looks at acting. Like I really liked playing characters. You know, I like doing different ones. You know, so they're all a lot of fun. You know, individually they're all just very different. You know, Puma is different than suicide was, and that's different from, say, I did a character called Sadistico for Lucha Libre USA, and, you know, those are different than Cobra 2, which was a mask character I did for New Japan, which was the second generation of a classic character in New Japan called Cobra. I do another character called El Bombero, which is a Lucha Libre character for a show called Lucha Vivoom. That's a lot of fun, and they're all very different. So, you know, I just I like being able to try different things and spread my wings and test my range, you know.
Awesome.
Is it true that you got some inspiration from Tiger Mask, the legendary Japanese mask wrestler?
Oh yeah, he's one of my he's one of my heroes. He's a big inspiration to me. I actually have him his mask tattooed on my left arm at the elbow. It's part of a mural. He influenced me a lot when I was younger. The original Tiger Mask did. I think because I picked up a lot of things in training at an early age, and a lot of things came naturally to me. So I always moved really well, and I was always really smooth with like the way that I could perform moves and stuff like that. So. And I was always real fast, too. I was always a pretty good athlete. So as I got a little bit older and I went to New Japan, a lot of the representatives there, they thought that I reminded them a lot of the original Tiger Mask, the way that I moved. And I told them, you know, that he's one of my heroes. And so that's kind of how they came about, you know, organizing the character for Puma. You know, we just kind of based it off of Tiger Mask.
Awesome. What is like working with Brad Kendrick also and as a mentor also?
Brian was actually not a mentor to me. That's just something that WWE made up. I actually started wrestling before Brian, but when we were younger, we would wrestle in a lot of the same places and. We would ride in the car together to different road trips and stuff like that, but he was more like a peer. He was never really my coach. That's just something that they made up for television. But a lot of the stories were true that we said. He is older than me, so a lot of times if I would ditch school when I was trying to get to shows, you know, I'd ditch school and ride in his car. He'd pick me up or something like that. But he was never really a mentor to me so much as he was, you know, just a really good friend.
Yes, and definitely y'all put on some good work in WWE and also even the classic Cruiserweight tournament.
Oh, thank you very much. It's, you know, I love being in the ring with Brian. You know, he's been doing it a long time. Obviously, you know, we kind of started around the same time, and he's really smart. He's a lot of fun, and, you know, we think alike in a lot of ways, so... It's always a lot of fun to wrestle, Brian.
Also, I noticed that you have a video game entrance called Power Up in WWE. Were you are you still a video game fanatic?
Yeah, I'm literally downloading Cuphead on my Nintendo Switch as we speak right now.
Awesome.
Wow. Okay, but I have a kind of a controversial question for you. May I ask it?
Yeah, sure. I'm an open book. You can ask me whatever you want.
Okay. There's been some talk in wrestling about the importance of kayfabe. People say kayfabe is dead. Some people say we still need it. Some people say we don't need it. What's your thoughts on kayfabe? Is it dead? Should wrestlers still do it? What's your thoughts on it?
you know, I don't think anything will ever really be dead, especially that aspect. People are always going to believe what you want them to, you know, and that's just life, you know. Everybody that's on social media that's super into politics, you know, that's all, they're all just fighting for something that they're told to believe. They don't really know, you know, and that's reality. That's everything in life. You know, if your favorite player gets traded off of a team, you only know what you're told to believe. You know, you don't know if they're a problem or if it was for certain reasons or not. Like, you never really know. And in performance art like this, same thing. I like to watch, my favorite movie outside of Back to the Future is a movie called The Prestige. And The Prestige, I think, is a really, really great metaphor for this job. And the reality is the magic never really dies, because there's always another layer that you can add to it, you know. It might change and you might have to find another way, but at its core, like, it'll never change, because the way that wrestling is built, just like a lot of things, like, the magic will last forever, but it's up to you how you use it.
Ah, that's a great awesome answer. I wasn't expecting that. That's a great answer.
Also, what was like your first backstage experience in the WWE?
Well, my first backstage experience ever, I was, I don't know, 21 maybe. I'd come in to do some dark matches and things like that. And I don't know, I mean, it's a locker room like any other place. I've never really been somebody that, like, gets anxious or, like, starstruck or nervous or anything like that sort of thing. So, to me, it's just another locker room, you know?
Right. Also, what's your thoughts on Dixie Carter as a promoter for Impact Wrestling and TNA?
I mean, I always got along really well with Dixie. I think she's a real sweetheart. She's always really nice to me. I always felt like she treated me very well, and I always thought she was pretty fair with me. I've never had a bad experience with her, to be honest. And as a human being, she was nice to be around. You know, I got to meet, like, her kids and her family and, you know, her husband and everything. And they were all really, really great to have around, in my opinion. And, you know, she's a business-minded person, so not everybody's going to agree with her decisions and things like that. But, and I'm saying that generally speaking. That's not really referencing anything specific. I just mean, generally speaking, anybody in an executive position is out there to be criticized. Like, they're always going to be criticized, because not everybody can agree with, you know, how to do things. That's why you appoint a leader, because somebody has to tell people no, and some people has to make decisions that other people do want to go with. And that's the thing is about it, is that she's just in that position. It's the same thing as with Vince or anybody else. Like, when you're in that position, it's going to be polarizing, because not everybody's going to agree with what leadership, you know, plans to do.
Right. And it seemed like that. I mean, it's like a few comparisons to like the Lakers owner Jeannie Buss, right there, inherited from her father, and she been criticized as a late because of letting go Magic and the turmoil with LeBron and them, and it seemed like she's sort of like a Dixie Carter of the as an NBA owner, basically, and they it's like both of them has this has the same persona also.
Yeah, I mean, the there's definitely a lot of parallels, I think, to that comparison. You know, it being a family business, and you know, obviously, again, you know, she's in a position of leadership, so you know, it's going to be a polarizing position. And you know, before her, you know, her brother was running the organization, and he had the same criticism. And at the time, people wanted her to be in that position. And so, you know, I think that kind of goes to show that a lot of times it's the position that creates the narrative, not necessarily the person or their decisions.
Right. And what is like being I think you was like basically the fourth or fifth guy to do this suicide, to go under the mask of suicide, and what is it's like to be that character also, in fact?
I mean, you know, it's funny because I was in TNA when they were coming up with the concept for it, and at the time I was Puma, and I remember being in the arena. It was for pay-per-view, and they had met with Frankie Kazarian, and they'd let him know that they wanted to go with this new character. They told him what it was. And Frankie really was at a point, I think, for himself that he needed to kind of branch out and grow as himself. Like, it was time for him to be him and for him to be the version of him that he should have been all along. So he was a little disappointed when they had asked him that, because he was looking forward to kind of spreading his wings, you know. And we joked in the locker room at the time, him and Christopher Daniels and myself, we had joked that, well, why don't maybe TJ should just, maybe me, like I should just do the character, because I was already a mass character there. And they had always been interested in having me full time as a talent, but they never quite knew exactly what position I would be in. And now they, you know, they had a guy obviously in me that was a full time mass character, and they wanted to create a mass character that somebody could be full time. And, you know, that didn't end up happening, obviously. Like, Frankie Kazarian became Suicide, and then, you know, a couple other people had played him, had played the character as well. And that was in 2008, maybe. And then you fast forward 4 years later, and they have me back again. I'd spent some time in Ring of Honor for a couple years, and then I was going back to TNA, and I was just sitting at home. They didn't know where to start me off. And they were bringing Suicide back, and I told them, hey, you know, I would love to play that character. And so they said, sure. And then, you know, from the first match, they said, you know, this is the, and it's nothing against Frankie or anything, but they just, when I had the first match of Suicide, they kind of had said to me that this is the type of character that we meant it to be the whole time. Like, my style of wrestling, you know, high flying and fast and technical and stuff like that. And so they loved it from there. So it's kind of funny because we joked about it, and then, you know, somehow it circled back around and I ended up being Suicide.
Awesome. And I definitely like the transformation of you going, becoming Manic also, in the stable of James Storm and Abyss also.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I loved being able to team with Abyss a lot. You know, we would do a lot of the house show tours and stuff like that together, and that was a lot of fun. He's a really smart guy. He's a really great guy in the locker room to be around, and he's a lot of fun in the ring. And you know, we had some cool matches. You know, I got to wrestle the Hardy Boys a lot. You know, the American Wolves and a lot of different dudes, and it was just it was a pretty cool experience.
Also, what's your thoughts of AEW starting up?
Well, I mean, it's there's a lot of things, I guess I would say. It's, for one, a lot of the guys are there, including Nick and Matt, obviously. They're good friends of mine, a lot of them. people that I've known for years and guys that started where I started, and I kind of watched them grow up too in a way. So I was really, really ecstatic and happy for them when the opportunity came about, because for a lot of these guys, Nick and Matt have been tearing it up for a long time. So, you know, you always knew that they were going to be continuing to do something great. But, you know, there's guys like, Christopher Daniels. He never settled down in a spot where you felt like, man, this is where he's really going to, like, make his roots and be what everybody knew he was, because everybody for a lot of years looked to Chris as like, like he was like a father figure to everybody, because he was like the first big indie star, and even to this day he's phenomenal, he's incredible, and it always felt like, hey, there's a lot of stop and go with him in TNA. Frankie Kazarian, same type of thing, he's been around a long time. Scorpio Sky is the guy that should have had a big time platform to be operating for a long time, and now he's finally going to get that chance. And the list goes on. There's so many guys over there that are friends of mine that I was so happy for. And you know, the project is big and it's exciting, but it's going to be a process. You know, they're in big, and it's a big opportunity and a huge platform, but it's going to be a process, and it's going to move along a little slower, I think, than people expect, but you just got to bear with it, because a year from now, you'll be able to really tell what they're sinking their teeth into, and they'll be in a bigger position to really grow and get the ball rolling, you know, probably next year, if you know what I'm saying. And so I think just because the way the internet is, information moves so fast, but their process isn't going to speed up just because everybody's aware of what's happening. It's going to go when it goes. So I just think as long as everybody bears with it, you know, it's a really exciting thing to see get launched.
Yes, it is. And fans have been waiting for this for years, basically. Even though there's other companies out there, more opportunities for the guys and the women also, and everyone really wants to see all these major companies be on the major networks in the future, right there, and just to bring that rise in wrestling once again from the 90s.
TJ, do you see yourself doing anything in Hollywood, like transitioning from wrestling to Hollywood, like John Cena, like The Rock, like Batista? Would you like to do something like that?
You know, I'd really love to. It's funny because when I was younger, I started out as an actor, like when I was a little kid. My mom wanted me to get into acting, so, you know, I had a Screen Actors Guild card and everything, and I had an agent. And I ended up really only reading for a couple movies. I just did some commercials and things like that. I didn't really land anything good. I was close on some stuff, but I didn't work a whole lot, because when I was younger, I didn't really understand acting. I mean, I was really young. I was like, you know, 9 years old or something like that. Like, I had the charisma for it, but I just didn't understand what it meant to perform in front of a camera. So I just wasn't any good at it. But now that I've been wrestling for so long and, you know, being in front of the camera and having a chance to, you know, just kind of own a moment and, like, host a moment or lead a moment, you know, stuff like that, you know, it's put me in a position to kind of understand what it's like to lead an audience, to lead a camera shot, to host something, or to just perform, you know, for a scene by scene, especially when you're in WWE. Like, there's a lot of times where I was just performing basically a scene, you know. And it's something that, like, I've put a lot of thought into. And even on the other side of the camera, too, you know, I have some friends who are producers for some networks that I've, you know, worked with, and I'm going to continue working on. I'm writing a screenplay for a horror short that I'm hoping to get made into a longer form horror movie. I'm really into scary stuff, so I thought that'd be cool. There's a reality TV show concept that I'm hoping to shoot soon that's also attached to a network that I'm hoping to get started on. So there's a lot of stuff that I would like to get into as far as, you know, performing in that way. But, you know, my heart's always going to be in wrestling, so as long as as long as my legs work, I'll go until the wheels fall off.
How did you get into wrestling? I mean, a lot of wrestlers has, you know, always, you know, a lot of them have this one match that says, yes, this is what I want to do. Or like a wrestling fan said, wrestling fan has a particular match that says, yes, I'm going to be a fan. What match that you watch got you into wrestling?
You mean like what's my aha moment?
Yeah, yes. The coming to Jesus moment.
I don't know that I actually have a specific moment. It's weird. I grew up always just thinking I would be a wrestler. It consumed me in a weird way. Like, I really loved it. I can't pinpoint a single moment where I said, this is it. This is what made me get into it. Because for as long as I can remember, wrestling has been my whole life. My whole life. Like, I mean, my earliest memories when I was 3 years old, you know, 2 years old, however young I was, like, I even just thinking about what I was back then, I was already consumed by wrestling. I don't know where it started, but I just always thought that everybody loved wrestling the same as me. Like, I didn't think I was the only one. Like, I thought everybody did. So I assumed everybody was going to grow up and be wrestlers. Like, I was kind of a dumb kid. I still am kind of a dumb kid. But yeah, I mean, I grew up always assuming I would do it. I assumed everybody wanted to do it. And then, you know, I got started, obviously, like we said before, at a young age. So when I was 12, 13 years old, you know, I decided, well, okay, you know, I need to figure out how I'm going to do this. And a lot of guys started off as amateur wrestlers, as far as, you know, what you know through, like, interviews and seeing documentaries and things like that. Again, this was like 1998, maybe. So, you know, there wasn't a lot of stuff on the internet at the time, and you couldn't really jump on social media and ask questions or something. So I would just write letters to, like, training centers from, like, PWI magazine and stuff like that. And I ended up getting started because I tried to wrestle amateurs in high school, but during summer school, my first year when I was a freshman, I went in. I was 13 years old. My new school, when I was enrolling, they said they didn't have an amateur team. They had gotten rid of the program, like, years ago. So that's when I decided to reach out to those pro wrestling schools. But for everybody, you know, like, you got to be 18 or 21 at the time. It wasn't that easy to get started young back then. Now it's a lot easier, but at that time it was really hard. You know, and I was only 13, so I couldn't relocate either. I couldn't go to, like, Texas or Ohio or something like that. But I was lucky because being from Los Angeles, like, there's a lot of Lucha Libre, being so close to the border, and they had a lot of gyms that just weren't advertised. So I was able to find some of them through word of mouth, and, you know, they weren't exactly regulating very heavily. You know, that type of Mexican wrestling culture, I mean, if you can walk in the ring, then they'll teach you how to do it if you're able to. And I was, and luckily I made it through.
You mentioned the internet. Do you think the internet has helped wrestling or it has hurt wrestling? Because, like, there's a lot more wrestling available on the internet. I mean, wrestling is more visible now from other places in the world. I mean, you go on the internet and see a wrestling program in England to find wrestling. But at the same time, you have these marks and these clowns who wants to put out every, like, talk about the secrets. And we'll talk about the bot stuff that people did in a match. So you think the internet is a good thing or a bad thing?
I mean, it's a mixed bag, you know. I mean, in some ways it made it more difficult to have a job as a professional wrestler. That's just the truth, because with the information, and I think really it's more so the generation that we're in that, you know, like, a lot of people don't watch TV anymore. They watch YouTube. And with that, that means that that movie stars aren't really movie stars anymore, because now, like, a famous streamer or a famous YouTuber is just as famous as a lot of actors, because that's, like, anybody can be a star now.
Right.
And in some ways you think that that's good, but the reality of it is that before this generation, the difficulty of being able to become a star and have a niche art to present to the world, and the lack of ability for everybody to be able to do it, made it so that the few people who could had a great spot to be in. But now, because it's so accessible, like, sure, it's great that everybody can do it, but that means that your ability to be successful doing it is going to be a lot lower than what it used to be, because everybody can do it, or at least be a part of it. You know what I'm saying? So In some ways it's good, some ways it's bad. I mean, obviously you mentioned that, you know, the internet kind of breeds a lot of negativity. That's something I firmly believe in. I wish that there was some way to counteract that. Unfortunately, it's just the world we live in now. But, you know, so there's a lot of negatives with it. But, you know, it does help a lot, because changes the way that you know, you could start a career. I remember, I mean, not long ago, I get asked all the time by young wrestlers, like if I have any advice for them starting out. And I would tell them it's hard, because when I started, wrestling wasn't like this. The world wasn't even like this. Yeah, I used to have to call people on a payphone. I would go on road trips with the directions to the arena written on, like, paper, you know, because MapQuest didn't exist. I didn't have a cell phone. The internet wasn't a thing. Social media didn't exist. You know, like, if you went on the internet, you were just going on, like, AOL. Like, there was not a lot of stuff in 1998, you know what I mean? So, like, there's no Google, no YouTube, no Twitter, no Instagram, no Facebook, none of that. No MySpace, none of it. So when I started, it was totally different. I remember you used to have to do these indie tournaments, like the Super 8. I just saw that still around, which I'm happy for. You do, like, the Super 8 or the Ted Petty, King of the Indies. Eventually later, they had, like, Best of the Best for CZW, which is still around, I believe. You do these types of things, and then that would be, like, a springboard to get into, like, what was just starting out at the time, Ring of Honor, or, you know, TNA when it started, you know, come about. Not to make me sound super old, but when I started, the WCW Cruiserweight division was still around. So this was like TNA. Like when my first 2 years of wrestling, I wanted to be in the WCW Cruiserweight division, because that's what was still on TV.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of old as hell, but yeah, so wrestling was way different then. You know, you used to have to send in, like, a picture and a bio and, like, a short, like, tape and stuff like that, like a VHS tape, you know, because DVDs didn't exist back then. I mean, they did, but, like, it was, like, new technology, you know?
Right.
A lot of indie shows weren't even recorded, you know, so then along with that, you know, means you could have been a local star, because, you know, local promotions, regional promotions, they were able to have their own little world that they created, their own little universe that they would operate in. And you could do really good as a local guy in certain, like, corners of the country, because people, like, I remember when Low Ki came out to do shows in LA one time, way back, I mean, like 2000, maybe 1999, like around then, 2001. And it was a huge deal, because people had never heard of Low Ki. And they never had seen a thing from him. But if you were in New York or Philadelphia, he's, like, famous to those fans, you know. Now, it doesn't matter. Before somebody goes anywhere, you already know everything about them. So, in a way, it creates new avenues to kind of build yourself. But the difficulty in that is it creates those avenues for everybody. So now you're competing with the entire world. So it's hard.
Yes, definitely a tough business back then. Much more approved. Social media is basically much more the key to get your your network out.
Do you enjoy playing a heel or a face more?
I mean, I guess it doesn't really matter. I think at a certain point, especially when you get really experienced at this, and like for me, I've always been a, like kind of a high IQ guy for wrestling. Like I take pride in my education of it. So like psychologically speaking, I've always been like a sponge and learned a lot. Like eventually it's my goal to be like a producer or an agent. And I've been asked to do that in a lot of places, including WWE, you know, someday when I'm done. But I guess what I'm saying is, like, after so many years, you start to see, like, operationally how everything works and the way that you're supposed to use the roles and everything like that and create these stories. It's really – there's really not much difference. Like, it's just one job and the other is the other job. And to me, I mean, I guess it would be easy to say – I think there was a certain time in the world where it's easy to say, well, it's more fun to be the bad guy because you can kind of behave however you want. The problem is we've reached a time in the world where, again, like, and I think it's really like the internet age and social media, like, because information travels so fast and everybody has kind of like lost track of their morals. So what mm-hmm. used to be considered bad is not necessarily bad anymore. It's just whatever you're into. Like, cause we live in a generation of memes and GIFs and stuff like that. So mm-hmm. everybody's a clown now, you know what I'm saying? So it's like, so like, for example, like if I said the Christopher Nolan, Batman movies, which one's your favorite? Everybody says Dark Knight. Everybody mm-hmm. says Dark Knight. But
yeah,
why do they say Dark
my
Knight?
Favorite.
Yeah, so why does everybody say Dark Knight? Because of the Joker. But that doesn't make any damn sense because the Joker's the bad guy. So why mm-hmm. does everybody like that for the bad guy? So there's – so the dynamic now is that either people don't care about their moral compass, they just like what they like, or they're trying to be in on it. So they like, you know, what stuff that they're not supposed to be programmed to like because they, you know, they feel like they're in on the secret or they're in on the operation or whatever. So in that sense, it makes it not as fun anymore to be the bad guy because you can't just act however you want. Because if you act however you want now, people might like that. Then you're the good
mm-hmm.
guy. So then it doesn't make any sense. The problem is there's just not a lot of people that are okay with people hating you. There's not enough wrestlers that are okay with that anymore. Everybody wants to avoid that. And that's kind of what makes it a problem.
That is true.
Do you ever want to I know you've done some YouTube stuff in the past, but would you like ever want to get really deep into YouTube, like start your own, you know, continue with on like doing YouTube videos, like consistently have your own like YouTube channel consistently? Or
you know, I thought about it a couple times. I don't know. It's just like I think because there's so many things that you can do nowadays, you know, and it's like it starts to get to where everything in the world becomes work to me, and like I just don't know if I could juggle so many things. Like even as it is, like I don't have a Facebook, for example. I've never had a Facebook because I've never really liked to have to do all that sort of thing. I've never really been big on social media. I kind of hate it, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
but like, you know, I have like an Instagram and I have a Twitter and that's it. That's enough for me. So then when I think about it, I'm like, okay, sometimes I'll stream my gameplay on Twitch and then that seems like a lot. But then it's like, okay, do I want to manage a YouTube? Do I want to start a website? Then I have to start a merchandise store and all kinds of stuff. And it's just like, maybe not all of that is for me. And so that's the only reason why I kind of didn't start like a YouTube channel just because it just feels like a medium that, yeah, maybe I wouldn't use it very well because I'd already be juggling so many things, you know.
Yeah, I understand. Would you ever, when you were in WWE, did you enjoy being on the road a lot? Because wrestlers, some wrestlers, you know, wrestle for the WWE, they say the travel weighs you down. Did the traveling, consistent traveling weigh you down when you moved to WWE?
You're saying did the traveling bring me down?
Yes, because I said people get tired of traveling all the time, you know, for the WWE. Did you get tired of the traveling?
No, I mean, I've always been fine with that. I mean, you got to understand, like, I mean, some of the guys that are in WWE, a lot of them actually, well, for one, like, half of them didn't even want to be wrestlers. They somehow ended up there. And for a lot of them, they haven't been doing it very long. Like, a lot of the guys that are there, if they've been doing it for 10 years, they're like a senior statesman. I've been doing it for 21 years, or almost 21 years. So, like, that's double almost anybody there. Mm-hmm. So like if I go into a locker room, it's basically like Undertaker, Big Show, Jericho when he was there, and then it was me. Like nobody else had that many years because most of the guys are younger or they didn't even want to be wrestlers or both. So for a lot of them, they're not used to the travel. For a lot of them, they didn't even sign up. They didn't even really want this job in the first place. They just ended up there, so the travel's rough, you know, for them because they didn't expect it. For me, I grew up with it, so I could live out of a suitcase all day. Sometimes I get stir crazy when I'm home. Like, I don't want to be home. I want to get back on a plane and just get somewhere. Yeah. So I don't mind that. I mean, but again, you know, I'm used to it. Like, this is, like, right now, this is the first time I've been a free agent in, like, 10 years. Because it'd be 3 years in WWE, then before that, it was 4 years in TNA. And that was a lot of traveling, too. For a couple of those years, they were going on the road all the time. And just like WWE, same type of setup. And, you know, then before that, I was in Ring of Honor for a couple of years. And before that, you know, I was in a TV show called Lucha Libre USA. They filmed for MTV. So I was always going to tapings for that. And then, you know, New Japan, touring system. CMLL, I lived in Mexico, also a touring system. Did some stuff with AAA. And even when I was, you know, doing indies and stuff when I was younger, I was always traveling. I was always hitchhiking in the back of cars, ditching school, just riding in the back of cars places. So, you know, that's just a way of life that I've been accustomed to. I honestly wouldn't know what life is like not having a packed suitcase at all times waiting by my front door, like waiting to leave, because I don't remember what life was like before that. It's been so long. It's been 2 decades already, you know. 20 years is a long time.
Yes.
Yeah, it is.
What was it like like to be around Vince McMahon backstage?
A lot like what people will say in interviews, you know, he's very much a father figure to everybody there, myself included, and he became a good mentor for me. I was one of the few people that was always comfortable knocking on his door. I'd talk to him whenever I wanted to, if I had an idea or if I had a question, you know, or anything. And he's easy to talk to. I'm sure that he can go off on people. I mean, there's times where he told me I did something wrong, but he's not what you see on television at all. I mean, he's a normal guy. He likes AC/DC, likes football, likes eating steak. You know, he's a normal dude, just like anybody else. And he's really soft spoken too. When you talk to him face to face, and you're sitting in his office, he doesn't talk super loud at you. He's not super. Doesn't talk super fast. He's not really intense. He listens really well. Most of the time, he lets you do all the talking. And he's a really good person, I think, to be around, at least in that environment. And he can be pretty funny too. I mean, there are times like I remember walking into gorilla position before 205 was going to start, and I was going to be the first match out. And I was waiting there, standing around, and it was just a night where Vince was having a lot of fun on that particular night. He was standing nearby me, but there were a lot of people in the small room, you know, because you're right behind the curtain. That's kind of like a little office back there. And he reached over and swatted me on the chest like a chop, like a Mexican wrestler chop. And wow. And just to be funny, you know, it's just because he thinks it's fun, you know, and he's like that. You know, I remember sitting around by the seamstress station. The seamstresses were some of my best friends there because there's two sisters and they've been around since like 1988. They were there. They made the rocker stuff. They made Bret Hart stuff. They've been there forever. So I used to love sitting with them and talking to them because they know so much history. And the third person that works there is Sasha Banks' husband, and he's about my age, and he was an indie wrestler, and we're into a lot of the same stuff. So I'm friends with them. I'll be sitting around hanging out with them, you know, most of the day if I have the day off or something like that. And I remember sitting there and talking to AJ. AJ's an old friend of mine from, like, TNA and stuff before. And I'm talking to AJ, and I see Vince creeping up behind AJ from down the hallway. And he's kind of, like, making the be quiet sign with his hands. And he gets close enough to AJ and just pushes him. So AJ stumbles. And then Vince kind of, like, hides behind me, laughs, gives AJ a big hug, you know. He's really like he's actually really an amazing person to be around in regular life, you know. He treats everybody pretty well, I think, and he treats you with respect when he talks with you and you know, he's like a father figure to people.
Yes. Yep. He used to the business for years as a kid with his while his father and grandfather was running it, you know, inherited. Yep. Yeah, TJ, we running out of time. Yeah. Yep.
Thank you guys for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, you can come back anytime.
You have a lot of weight.
Oh
wow.
Well, you guys are really great, easy to talk to, and I appreciate your guys' time. And you know, anytime you guys want, let me know. I'll try to make time and come back on.
Sure,
okay.
We'll definitely get back in contact with you. Would you like to plug anything for the listeners out there?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really have much. You know, I only got a couple socials. You can find me on social media. Both of them are under @MegaTJP. I should have some more stuff coming soon. I mean, I'm still in my 90 days, so I can't really do much right now. I'm supposed to be sitting at home quietly, but, you know, I'm working behind the scenes on some stuff. So I'll announce anything on my socials. I might have a website coming out soon that'll have my touring schedule and everything set up. I got about 55 different events between now and October that you can catch me at all over the world, all over the country, all over the world, England, Australia, Tokyo, Europe, everything, you name it, it's probably on there. And if not, it's probably coming soon. But my socials, @MegaTJP, and you can find everything through there. And thanks very much, guys. I appreciate it.
Thank you, sir. Good night.
Yes, thank you. You have a good night.
All right. Thanks, guys. Bye.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, that was talented, wonderful, former WWE Cruiserweight Champion, TJ Perkins, TJP. Yes, if you want to download this episode, it's right up at blogtalkradio.com/WrestlingIt Factor Radio, or check out our fan page at Facebook at WrestlingIt Factor Radio/It Factor Entertainment Radio, or if you want to check some of the episode leaks, is also at Twitter at Wayne Benitez, WrestlingIt Factor Radio/It Factor Entertainment Radio. This is Wayne Benitez and Tommy Two Chips signing off. Later.